Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Brought to you by Zadda Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
The Killer Bees!
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Brendan is back behind the glass. The Killer Bees, a Wednesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I don't know if you caught the show yesterday, Brendan, but it was 3 hours of silence because we are incapable of doing radio whenever you are not here.
I was sleeping for probably 75% of the show.
Well, so were we for 75% of the show because we didn't have you. Sean did an excellent job, but we're just lost. I mean, we're basically in the muck whenever you're gone. Astros weren't in the muck last night. They won a baseball game. They beat the Snakes. They beat the Diamondbacks. Astros only have seven games left this season. Five wins matches them for the most wins they've ever had in a season. 107 wins in 2019. I heard James Click talking about that this morning over there on Cardiac Arrest. And, hey, that'd be cool to get. That'd be a cool thing to get. Also saw a little bit of a scare yesterday with Jordan Alvarez leaving the game. Look, he stayed in the game. He ran. He got another at-bat. Probably more of a tweak than anything else. I doubt we see him in the lineup today. They have a day off tomorrow. I'm not concerned about this, although they did use the nasty D word with Jordan Alvarez. Anytime they mention that nasty D word of discomfort, that always makes us shake in our boots a little bit. That always makes us nervous a little bit
Houston. But just by the theory of redundancy, they use it so often every single time that now it doesn't have that raw effect it used to have where you and I looked at each other like, oh, God, could that be the end of the season?
I was joking on Twitter yesterday, and I think it was Alex that tweeted us. He said, oh, no, look, here we go, that nasty D word. And I said, that can mean he could be in the lineup tomorrow or he could be in the lineup in 2024. Yeah. Like, Michael Brantley started off with a little bit of shoulder discomfort, scoffed at the idea that he was going to be gone for the year, and then all of a sudden he's gone for the year. The fact that you were
Lance McCullers said forearm discomfort. I just want to remind you.
He did. He did at the end of last season, then all of a sudden he's gone for half a year.
Mid-season this season.
Yeah, so discomfort's always a buzzword for the Astros. Now, I mean, he did stay in the game. Mm-hmm. He did run to second base. He did have another at-bat. So I'm not really worried about this, but that nasty D word for the Astros is always going to draw a little bit of our viewing
one more
pleasure.
Win. Just get one more win. Get one more win. I understand James Click and other people, and including the fan base, would love to see the greatest regular season record in the history of the Houston Astros. It's unimportant. It's irrelevant. It means nothing in the grand scheme of things. Get one more win, wrap up the best record in the American League, realize that the Dodgers are out of reach, and that's fine. You'll deal with that if you get there, and hopefully you get there. But in order to get there, you got to be right. And so to be right means if Jordan tweaked anything, sit down until, I don't care when, next week. Sit down through the weekend, sit down through Friday, sit down for a little bit and make sure that it gets right. If anybody's nursing injuries, if anybody's a little dinged up, sit down. We don't worry about all the other. I get guys are chasing personal numbers and things like that. Verlander, one of them. But at the same time, be realistic about what the real goals are and what your real objectives are, and that is to win a World Series. And so if Jake Meyers is brought back up and he gets more time so you can figure out if he belongs on the roster and if he's back to being able to be a Major League Baseball player, perfect. Get one more win or one more Yankee loss, and then don't care about who's in the lineup.
Have to win that game. I mean, the magic number is one. They don't need to get that one win. I also don't care about the win-loss record. No one's going to look back at the 2022 season and be like, oh, yeah, they won 106 games. It's going to be a 100-game winner. It's going to be an AL West champion, and then the rest of their season is going to be defined by how they do in the postseason. Now, this year is different. The fact that you have 5 days in between the end of the regular season and the first game of the playoffs for a top two team in either league kind of changes my viewpoint on how to handle these last seven games for the Houston Astros. Do I want Justin Verlander throwing 115 pitches, chasing eight shutout innings? No, I don't. Do I want Yordan Alvarez putting any sort of weight on what is a minor tweak of his ankle? No, I don't. But I also do believe in the conversation of rest versus rust, right? Mm-hmm. Like Altuve's rolling. We'll talk about that in greater detail a little bit later. Alex Bregman hit a bomb yesterday. There's some good things happening. Kyle Tucker had a couple of hits. Trey Mancini had a couple of good at-bats. Yuli Gurriel had one hit in the game yesterday. I thought he had one of his best offensive days in recent memory. Moving a runner over. Driving in a run by hustling out a heart like a ground ball to third base and beating it out for, you know, when the bases were loaded so he didn't have the inning-ending double play. And then also had a hit. So, like, there is the dilemma for Dusty Baker knowing that there's a five-day gap between the end of the regular season and game one for the Houston Astros and the ALDS. So I'm not standing on the table for the let's rest everybody. Let's sit everybody the remainder of the season. You play these guys, you might treat it like spring training where there's maybe Altuve leaves in the sixth inning in one game. Bregman leaves in the seventh inning in the next game. Ledmus Diaz should get some playing time. Maybe Hensley deserves an extended look to see if he's going to make your playoff roster. But because you have those 5 days, you still got to run out your regulars on a pretty consistent basis.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Because of that gap between the end of the regular season and your first playoff game, you got to keep them fresh. And no matter how many times you want to try and have an inter-squad game or, you know, you bring up some of your space cowboys or something to, you know, to try and throw to hitters, it's not the same. And it's not the same intensity, and it's not the same as facing true major league pitching. So I'm a firm believer in avoiding rust by making sure guys are playing to some degree, though you don't have to push them like you would if you had an opening round playoff series. You still would like to see them stay as fresh as possible. That's why I think they play, like you said, they you can spatter it through and do what Dusty was going to do anyway if this was in May, and use the majority of your starters. If you're up or down big or they've gotten enough at-bats for a game and you don't want to push them too far, sit them down after a couple at-bats and midway through the game, bring in some other guys and start some of the young guys early, and then you can always make changes there as well. But I still think that there's guys that have to be analyzed on top of guys that got to stay fresh. If you got, and like I said at the start of the show, if you have guys that are dinged up, if you have guys that are fighting any kind of injury at all, next week you can get back in the swing of things and get your timing back. But right now, as soon as you wrap it all up for the American League, if you're hurt, sit down.
Yeah, any sort of knock at all, you get a day off or you get days off until that knocker
like
element.
Like they did with Altuve when he got hit in the elbow, right? If you're in the middle of a pennant race and Altuve gets hit in the elbow, tough it out, my man. You got to keep playing. We need you at the top of our lineup. He got hit in the elbow. You knew you were in the driver's seat for everything you needed to accomplish. He not only sat down one game, sat down two and said, we might sit him three, except he wanted to play.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Like, Yordan Alvarez is not playing until he tells me and the doctors tell me that he is 100%. There is zero concern of anything with the ankle. But I'm playing the other guys. I'm treating this sort of like a spring training, fall training, if we want to call it that. Now, you don't have the luxury of having the huge roster that you have in spring training. You don't even have the luxury of having the old September call-ups when you could, you know, increase your roster size to 40. So you do have limitations on how many guys you can sit because you only have 28 players on the roster. 14 of those are position players. But I'm rotating an Altuve, a Bregman. They're getting days off. A Yuli's going to get a day off. Mancini's going to get a day off. And you're just rotating guys in and out. As far as I've even heard Dusty talk about this and Click a little bit too. The guys are still chasing numbers. I think Kyle Tucker's chasing 30-30. I think he really wants 30 home runs and 30 stolen bases.
He stole the base last night probably for that very reason.
I think he went on first pitch as soon as he drew a walk. I believe he is chasing 30-30. There's probably other milestones that some of these individual players are chasing.
30-25 is the first one where it's in a different category. But 30-30 would be huge. I don't know how he's going
to
get it.
I don't think there's enough games for him to do it, but I think he's chasing it. I think he's trying his darnest.
100 RBI
to try
things
to get there.
Are big. You know, guy Yordan's the next to get to 100 ribbies. There's Ed Verlander obviously chasing all his individual stats to where they were saying he might get two starts instead of one.
Well, I believe in the two starts for Justin Verlander. I really do.
Because of the timing with the 5 days off.
Yeah. I mean, Justin Verlander needs to make the start today. It is his day. He's pitching today on the 28th. Like, he needs another start. I bet he's going to get it. He'll probably get
Here's
it in the Philadelphia
I was
series.
Ask you last night. When do you start Lance again? Because if you missed, and you got to get him back in, but you're trying to keep everybody else on somewhat of a schedule, and you filled in nicely with Garcia last night. When do you get Lance back into the rotation?
I mean, it depends on when he feels well. I mean, if he's not healthy, if he's not, you know, he's still cold, he's under the weather, he's only feeling 80%, he's not feeling like Brendan where he's almost 100% after a day off. I mean, you kind of have to wait and take his temperature.
Almost perfect.
Almost perfect, yeah. Lance McKellar's is never almost perfect.
Direct quote from Brendan, almost perfect. That's way better than 100%. I mean, I just need to know if Lance McCullers is having nasal discomfort, if he's having tummy discomfort, if he's having, you know, other kinds of discomfort.
Yeah.
But we need to know what he's dealing with first and foremost before we start contemplating how many days is he going to be out.
I'm not too concerned about Lance. The fact that they said he was ill, I mean, who knows? With the Astros, who knows? But how would you I think that they would say something more than – I think that they would say arm discomfort. I don't know if they would – hide it behind some ill thing. I'm okay with what the diagnosis was for Lance, but I mean, you never know. It's, I mean, in the back of your mind, you're wondering what exactly is the case. 713-780-ESPN. How should the Astros prioritize the last week of the season? 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Also, Jose Altuve yesterday. A little double dong action for the Astros leadoff man. Boy, he's in a groove. It's the Killer Beast on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Houston Cougars trying to get into a groove beginning on Friday, looking to make it back-to-back victories. They're hosting the Tulane Green Wave, 3-1 Tulane team, a good football team led by Willie Fritz. And the Houston Cougars have the American Conference opener for the final time, and it's all underneath the Friday night lights over at TDECU Stadium. Cougars want you at the stadium, and they're putting their money where their mouth is. Tickets start at just $10 for some Friday night lights. UHCougars.com, 713-GO-COUGS. A good way to ditch work early on a Friday. A lot of people like to ditch work early on a Friday and head to a local happy hour, something like that. How about you head over to the campus of the University of Houston and take part in some of the tailgating that opens at 2 o'clock ahead of Friday night's game. Cougar Walk begins at 3:45. You don't want to miss the team. Walk into the stadium. Don't miss all the pomp and circumstance of college football. Special halftime performance as we celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month. The U of H Mariachi Pumas and the Spirit of Houston join together at the half to perform entertainment by the cheerleaders, Cougar Dolls, Shasta and Sasha, and a DJ Yobi Yobs in the student section. You don't want to miss all of that. Tickets only $10 while supplies last. UHCougars.com or give them a call at 713-GO-COUGS. Don't miss all the fun and pageantry of college football. Come early, be loud, and wear black. It's a blackout game.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
And he drills one deep to left field. He has tied the team record with his 12th leadoff home run.
Jose Altuve, little double dong action for the little man at the top of the order for the Houston Astros.
Did you see the second one?
Yes.
Did you see the replay of it?
I don't think I did. I don't think I saw the replay.
I'm going to tell you something
right
now.
I was at the game yesterday. I was there.
Which game? Your baseball game?
The one that we're currently talking about.
I don't know why that's funny. With you, it could be U of H anything.
Yes, I was at the baseball game.
Okay. Well, the one that really made me take notice is when they ran the replay of the second home run, he got caught on his front foot looking for a different pitch, and he paused. Right as he was shifting his weight all forward, he kind of did a half pause and then just threw the barrel down. And just punched it right out of the yard. You know you're going good when you can adjust mid-swing and you can drive a ball out of the yard to left center field. He's on a roll right now.
Probably wasn't a very good pitch. If you could be sitting fastball and you get something off speed and you can still drive it out of the park, probably a little bit of a hanger. I didn't see the pitch.
Yeah, it was sitting up in the zone a little bit. But I'm saying when you go from hands back, locked and loaded, and then you start to shift all your weight forward, and then all of a sudden, right as your front foot's about to touch, you kind of pause for a second and time it up with the barrel. I was extremely impressed with just that swing alone going, no, he's in a groove right now if he can do that.
Yeah, I mean, he's been really in a groove all year long. He's been really, really good. McTaggart had the tweet listing all where he's at on all the leaderboards, which, like, I've always kind of been going back and forth on what I would do with Altuve in the order. Like, at this point, there's really no sense even talking about it because the Astros lineup is the Astros lineup.
Yep.
It's what it's going to be. So there's no sense of standing on the table, be like, hey, move Altuve into the middle of the order. Like, whatever. He's one of your best hitters. He's batting in the leadoff spot, and he's been fantastic. You compare him to some of the other league leaders around baseball. He's second in the league in runs, has 100 now. He's third in OPS. The dude's a second baseman that stands 5'2", and he's third in the league in OPS behind Aaron Judge, Yordan Alvarez. Like, stack those dudes up.
That's impressive.
And Aaron Judge, a massive man. Yordan Alvarez, a massive man. And then Jose Altuve. Like, you kind of have to look for him a little bit in the lineup of those three guys. Fourth in slugging, fourth in on base. The numbers go. He's 11th in home runs. I get, anytime Jose Altuve has a good game, somebody will take a little bit of a tweet at me. Or I hear it on the Twitch all the time. Oh, Altuve passed his prime, huh? Look, I'll double down on that. Jose Altuve, as great of a year as he's having currently, and it's been great, just because you're past your prime is an all-time great doesn't mean that you're going to be bad even though you're past your prime. Altuve, as great as he is, where do you think he's going to finish in MVP voting this year?
Oh, he's not going to be in the top five.
That's the point. At his very best.
This is the same discussion you and I had about Alex Bregman now versus prime Alex.
Yeah, he's still
Bregman.
Great.
Right.
I never said that Jose Altuve wasn't great. I said he is past the prime of being the best player in the league. He won the MVP in 17. He was third in the MVP in 16. He'll never be that player again. That hints past the prime. But just because you're an all-time great and you're past your prime, your pinnacle of your career, doesn't mean you can't continue to be great. It just means you're not going to be as good as you were in your pinnacle at your very, very best.
Let me throw this at you, though. Because one of the barometers we use, and it's normally a pretty accurate barometer, and we used it for both Bregman and we used it for Altuve, is where would they finish in MVP voting, and would they ever win, be in consideration for another MVP voting again? That's all based on a year, too. I mean, sometimes you can have a better year than you've had or a similar year to a year you had when you were in your absolute prime for both guys, but you could get trumped by an Ohtani. You could get trumped by a Judge. You could get trumped by a guy having just one of those all-time type years where no matter how good you are, the voting is going to be better for somebody else. So I think we have to also take that into consideration, because I don't disagree with you that we're not going to see, for either guy, MVP type. Now, and here's the thing, Bregman's still young enough, and as much as it was a more relevant conversation when he was scuffling the way he was, the way he's tore it up in the last 2 months since he really got going, there could be an honest discussion about could he find, keep that going next year, and if he does it for a full season, could that be in the running for consideration? Again, it's basically based on the rest of the landscape. How's everybody else playing? Is Ohtani doing what he's doing again? Is Judge having another monster? Mm-hmm. Is Yordan, of all people, staying healthy and doing the numbers that he was on the pace to do before he got hurt? That's kind of part of what goes into it, but you can't slight Bregman if he just continues to roll the way he's rolling.
Look, it's not a slight to say that they're past the prime. Like, Alex Bregman, I think Alex Bregman is past his prime. I think 18-19 Bregman was his prime. Fifth in MVP voting, second in MVP voting. Jose Altuve, 16-17, was his prime. Third in MVP voting, first in MVP voting. I would be shocked if either one of those guys finishes top five in MVP voting again in their lives. That's not a bad thing. If you finish top 10, you're still a great player. Altuve is a great player. Alex Bregman's still a very good player. Are they as good as they once were? No. That means they're past their prime. It doesn't mean that they can't continue to be great. And Jose Altuve has continued to be great. And he's transformed his game, too. Like back in 16-17, he had some pop, but he didn't have 28 home run pop. He was leading the league in batting average. He was stealing a lot of bases. He was playing a much better level of defense. He's transformed his game to be more of a power hitter, which is, shocking. Whenever we first saw Jose Altuve early in his career, we thought, okay, here's a dude that's going to put the ball on the bat. He's not going to walk a lot because he doesn't, take a lot of pitches. He still doesn't take a ton of pitches, but he has improved and gotten better in that area. We never thought that Jose Altuve would be a 30 home run a year player. He's done it twice, and he has a chance to do it again this year.
We never thought when he came in. I said to you this year I thought he would hit 30 bombs.
Right. I'm saying coming in. We know that now. He hit 31 home runs last year. But I'm saying like the first
but
3
then,
years of his career.
But even at the start of the year, could he do it again?
Well, he did it
not
in 19, he did it in 21. I'm more talking about the first 4 years of his career, he combined to hit 21 home runs. First four years of his career, he combined to hit 21 home runs.
The other thing that's really interesting is how he transformed from being more average first, just base hit type guy, to being more of a power-focused
He's transformed
hitter.
It's crazy how
he's become more of a George Springer leadoff hitter with the amount of home runs he hits on a consistent basis from the leadoff spot. And that's why we had discussed earlier in the year, do you move him down? Because are you wasting some of his pop by not having guys on base? But when how many times he sets the tone by giving you a lead early with a leadoff home run is just, to me, sometimes it's amazing for a guy his size at his age doing what he's doing and doing it based on power, where it's normally the opposite. Big power, guys that come out with a lot of power early in their career try to really kind of become more base. Look at Michael Brantley. Michael Brantley had more pop for a lot of years. Now he just made sure he focused on being a 300 hitter. But what he's doing, the way he's doing it, whether he ever is in contention for another MVP or not, shows you that there's no reason to believe he can't do it for several more years.
Yep.
And that's a huge bonus for the Astros.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think Jose Altuve still has some good years left, some really good years left, and this is a really good year. Are we going to look back at 22, 23, 24 and compare it to 16 and 17 and say it was as good? No, we can't. I mean, he was on a different level in 16 and 17. He was the best player in the American League in 17 and top three best player in 16.
Of all the things we were just talking about, all the guys I was rattling off, Mike Trout still is fully capable of having another monster year.
Yeah, it's him is about staying healthy.
And he's always in the MVP conversation when he does. So, again, if MVPs are a barometer and being in the consideration, then both of them probably are. The deck is stacked against
them. I mean, I wouldn't put Altuve and Bregman in my top two Astros most likely to win an MVP. Jordan Alvarez.
Jordan's going to be number
one. I would put Kyle Tucker ahead of those two guys, too. Tucker does, I mean, he plays really good defense. He's a very good offensive player. And he's also, like, BK was telling this the other day, and I went back and confirmed it. Kyle Tucker is going to gain so much by the shift being eliminated in baseball. Like, his average is going to skyrocket. Like 20. Jordan, too. But Tucker, I think, has BK told us he's like top three in the league or whatever in grounding into the shift. So Kyle Tucker, I think, is going to get a little bit of everybody's going to get a boost. Every offensive player is going to get a boost some way, but it's going to help others a little bit more. Jose Altuve's first year, he was called up like kind of late in the season. He played 57 games in 2011. He hit two home runs. The next year, 2012, a full season, he hit seven home runs. 2013, a full season, he hit five home runs. 2014, another full season, he hit seven home runs. So his first 3.5 years in baseball, Jose Altuve combined in 514 games to hit 21 home runs. He has transformed his game to have already had two 31 home run seasons, and he's two away from having another 30 home run season. And let's keep in mind, he lost some games in the beginning of the year because he was hurt.
You think ESPN will break in if he gets close, if he gets 29? You think there's a chance they'll show it if he gets close to 30?
I don't know why they would do that.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, it's just 30.
I mean,
it's not 61.
You know I'm saying it tongue-in-cheek the way they're doing judge.
I mean, Altuve is not about to tie for seventh on the all-time single-season home run record.
Can I tell you this, though? The other thing that really is annoying to me is like Greenberg in the morning, literally disgusted that Judge is being walked. I watched the at-bats. I had no choice in some cases. But when you watch the at-bats last night of Aaron Judge, he got plenty of good pitches to hit.
He
just didn't hit them. And at the end, the guy's not going to throw one down Main Street and say, hey, take your best shot. They go nitpicking the corners at the end of the at-bat. And if he gets walked on a 3-2 pitch, so be it. But it wasn't like it was, take four and head to first base Barry Bonds type walks. They were giving him some good pitches. He just didn't hit them. But for people to be outraged about that.
Yeah, it's kind of silly.
It's Toronto's baseball. Playing the baseball. Series means something to Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees are in the race for the number one seed, too. Unlikely, but it's not, it hasn't been determined. What was the Wilhouse saying about our show yesterday?
Oh, they were talking about the way they were talking about their bets and what they did. And they were like, but it's all football based. Can you imagine if people were having these kind of conversations about baseball and baseball betting, like baseball focused shows? They go, hey, like the Killer Bees talking about the chances to win and the win probability of a +185 for the Blue Jays tonight.
That sounds fun. That sounds outstanding. Yeah. Doesn't BK make like half inning bets?
No, BK wasn't in the conversation.
I know, but I think BK makes half inning bets.
I would never let us do baseball bets.
Who the hell is dumb enough to bet on baseball?
Well, I mean, I
think it's
been
a crapshoot.
I've been known to do it.
It's a crapshoot.
You do that in your free time.
What should we call that show? Sports Radio Wheelhouse, Wheelhouse 610. Like, what should we call the Wheelhouse? What should be our little pet name for that cute little show in the afternoon?
What do they call?
In the drive
what do they
time?
Call? Vandermeer's evening shows with John and those guys.
I think they call it Texans All Access
Radio or Texans All Access.
It might be Texans Radio. I can't remember. Yeah. The All Access might be the one they put on the internet. I think radio is the one that they have for the hour.
Okay.
Yeah. You want to call it that? I mean, Vandermeer and Harris might not like that a whole.
No,
lot.
I would call it Wheelhouse All Access. Would be the All Access NFL.
You know what we should do? We should open this up to the Hive.
Yeah.
What should be the Killer Bees nickname for the Wheelhouse? 713-780-ESPN. Please let us know. 713-780-3776. The bench had our names in their mouth yesterday.
Oh, really?
John Granato had something to say about the Killer Bees and the whole embrace the suck. We'll discuss that next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We asked you for some of the wheelhouse nicknames that the Killer Bees can call that program. See what I did there?
I did.
Program. 713-780-ESPN. Some of the Twitch line. Somebody said Training Wheelhouse.
He's fantastic.
OG said the best show in the lineup. See, some nicknames aren't true. I think that's OG's where OJ was going for there.
He lives for that.
King, isn't Wheelhouse a baseball-type analogy? I think it's more about, like, boats, isn't it? Like, in the wheelhouse is where the captain sits.
I think in your wheelhouse is like a pitch right down Main Street.
Yeah, it is. Like, that's definitely a term and a moniker, and I've used that, you know, talking about baseball before. But I think the original term comes from being, like, on a boat. I think that's where the captain steers the ship is the wheelhouse, and that's the wheel for the boat.
I think,
but I've been known to be wrong before. We all know that. A degenerate gambler says that you could call that show the Burkhead Wheel Route.
I like it.
Mediocre for mediocre, I guess. King also says that show doesn't know anything about baseball. I paraphrase that. But,
that's why they don't talk about it.
But that's also why you criticize it. Many people oftentimes criticize things that they're not good at. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of times people criticize advanced metrics. Why? Because they don't understand it. Message deleted said Will's on the bus. I think that's always one. All right, 713-780-ESPN if you want to keep those nicknames coming. 713-780-3776. Granado was talking about the Killer Bees yesterday.
Tell, 'cause I missed it.
Yeah. Somebody, I think it was Not Santa, that notified me of this. He was like, hey, Granado, not a fan of Embrace the Suck. So I went back and listened to it, and look, I mean, he wasn't, like, talking crap. He just doesn't really like our embrace the suck mantra for the Houston Texans. Here was Granado yesterday morning saying how he's anti-embrace the suck.
I'm so sick of embrace the suck, though. I'm so sick of it. I can't. I'm not doing it. They've been suck enough, long enough. It's time to stop the suck. Yeah. Okay. Embrace the suck? No. It's stop the suck. And starts now. It starts this week. Yeah, I bet on them. I bet on this team, and I'm stupid for it. But I'm still. I don't want. I'm done with embrace the suck. You guys can. Well, we need that top pick again. No, no, we don't. We need to start playing better football. We need to start being a better organization. We need to start being a winning team. We need to start learning to win. We don't need a top pick. We don't have to have the number one pick every flipping year. Okay, a top three pick every year. What you need is to start playing better football, building a better culture here, because it sucks.
I don't think you always need wins to build culture. If you look at Kelvin Sampson's Houston Cougars, they won 13 games the first year here, where they set the foundation of the culture. OG on Twitch, E on Twitch, they're saying they believe in this. Hashtag stop the suck.
Stop mentioning OG. He's just getting credit for horrible takes.
Okay. I mean, we like to highlight bad takes here. Take Boulevard every Thursday at 2.
You mentioned the wheelhouse, so you're right.
Anyways, Granado would also go on to say, like, he would relate the Astros to the Texans. How, you know, the Astros had the 2015 season, so they stopped the suck. They were able to turn it around in 15 and start this golden era of Houston Astros baseball. Granado says, we've been sucking long enough. We need to stop the suck, not embrace the suck. Comparing the Astros to the Texans, to me, is a massive reach. The Astros went nine seasons, almost a decade, Blankers, mm-hmm. without getting to the playoffs. They almost went 10 years without tasting the postseason. They had three straight years of 100 loss seasons. Jeff Luhnow embraced the suck.
Those were tough
and
years,
because man. He embraced the suck for a long time, you're right, those 3 years, 100 losses, no one was going to games. They were pulling 0.0s on, what was it at the time, Root, Comcast? Root, I don't even remember.
People were more concerned about the Oklahoma 89ers that year because George Springer was on that team, and they couldn't wait to bring him up, and they were ticked that the Astros weren't going to keep team control.
And I think it was a good idea. I'd rather have George Springer an extra year than have George Springer that year. But then you compare the Astros to the Texans. All right, nearly a decade without getting to the playoffs. Three straight 100 lost seasons. This will only be the third year that the Houston Texans don't get to the playoffs. So, like, this whole, like, we've sucked long enough. 2 years ago, you're an Arrowhead about to upset the Chiefs to host an AFC championship game. This period of suck for the Houston Texans has not been that long.
Here's the thing, and John's entitled to his opinion. That's why show by show, we all have our own opinions, and that's why you don't you listen to us instead of the flagships, which try to brainwash you into the team's opinions. But when you get into it, how quickly we forget how quickly you were on top of the football world until Bill O'Brien and cost you a chance to go to your first AFC championship game. And then the thing is with the plan of embracing the suck, if you listened and took the time to go in depth with me when I started the entire campaign, it's a 2-year process to prevent you from going on a 5 to 7 year process of extended suck. If you just embraced it for 2 years and assuming, and I didn't know at the time, you were going to get what you got for Deshaun Watson, regardless of what else was going on in a 2-year period of time. And you already saw it through year one in the draft. That you got substantially better just by the guys that Caserio brought in year one of Embrace the Suck. You go through it for one more year. And by the way, why the hell would you pull the emergency brake right now and try and turn it around so that you could get in the middle of the draft with your own draft pick after what we've seen and who's playing quarterback and all the different needs you still have to fill? It makes zero freaking sense to me. So let it play out. And again, I understand that you want to see progress. You want to see good football, as John said. You can see good football because the other thing, again, if you listen to me in depth, you'd understand that I said part of it would be they're competitive. They're in the game. They're still doing things that give you encouragement that this team is on the right track. And at the end of the day, they fall just a little bit short. But it doesn't mean that they're getting their doors blown off. It doesn't mean that, you know, this is this catastrophe that we can't digest for another week or two. It's the fact that it's progress being made without wins being stacked. That's as simple as it is. And in a year's time, with another good draft, then you can go into free agency and spend to your heart's content to get extra players you didn't draft and build this team up so where they can take the next step. But really, 2 years, and you can't handle it, but you endured all those 100 lost seasons for the Astros, but that was just fine and they did it right? Stop it, man.
I will say I had the same thought that it's not like the suck has been that long. And I understand the importance of finding your quarterback. Like, you can't deny that. The only thing I would pressure you guys on, there's really not history, or I shouldn't say none, but there's very little history of that being the way to win in the NFL. And it's not because teams haven't been bad for long periods of time. The Jets have had a bunch of top picks. The Lions have had a bunch of top picks. The Browns, the Jaguars. And yeah, the Browns won a playoff game a couple years ago. And yeah, the Jags look good through 3 weeks. Look at the playoff teams year after year after year. And there are almost no examples of teams who have been consistently picking at the top. One here or there, like you could point to the Bengals getting Joe Burrow, and I think they picked early the year before that. But they are the exception, not the rule.
I think, let's see, Kyler Murray led the Cardinals to the playoffs last year, right? And certainly they don't look great this year. The Cardinals don't. They haven't looked fantastic.
But it's a good example. They got off to that huge start last year.
They had the first overall pick, and actually they drafted quarterbacks back-to-back years after they missed out Rosen. On Rosen. Or they drafted
but then,
Rosen,
but
and
then
he sucked.
After that, they traded for D-Hop. They brought in A.J. Green. They brought in a J.J. Watt. They brought in guys. They tried to bring in veterans at a certain point to get even better. They made the playoffs.
Yep.
They looked like they had the right thing going, so you can't fault them for the way they went about their business either.
Kansas City was already winning whenever they drafted Mahomes. Yep. They were a playoff team with Alex Smith. Now, Buffalo, when they drafted Josh Allen, were not. So Buffalo did go.
Did they take him around 10?
What? Yeah, they took him below 10. Like, they took him like in the top 10, but not one. I mean, he was in the top 10. I think he was the 8th overall pick.
I was thinking he was 10, but I don't remember. And that might have been Mahomes 10. And was Mahomes that? I don't know. You look at the entire playoffs last year. You look at the entire playoffs last year, and very few of these teams were picking at the top 5 consistently. San Francisco, no. Dallas, no.
Whoa. Didn't San Francisco have a bad year and then were able to pick at the top of the draft and then all of a sudden they're back into the playoffs?
I was
going to
mention the Niners on the other
side. Yeah, what did they do before that bad year? Didn't they've
been up and down. Kyle Shanahan has a career 500 record in the NFL. Like we kind of look at San Francisco as like this power that Shanahan has built, and frankly, it has not been.
Harbaugh spun it, right? Because Alex Smith was his guy until he wasn't. And then Alex Smith got hurt and he decided we're going to Colin Kaepernick. And then for that window of time, Colin Kaepernick was on fire. And they got to a Super Bowl, and they looked like they were going to be dominant for multiple years, and then it just the wheels fell off.
They forced out Shanahan, or forced out Harbaugh, brought in Shanahan, and Shanahan's been up and down.
I'm not trying to argue that top picks are not valuable. That would be silly.
Right.
I'm arguing that top picks are not the only way. And I wouldn't
the
best
way. We're not saying the only way.
I wouldn't even argue it's the best way.
Well, it's the best way, then.
I wouldn't even argue that it is the best
way. What is the best
way? One option.
He wouldn't argue.
I don't know that there's a definitive best way. If you look at the playoffs last year, it is filled with teams who did it different ways. They all did it with a great quarterback.
There you go.
But
there you go.
But the idea that great quarterbacks only come in the top couple picks is silly.
No, it is silly. I understand that you can find other great quarterbacks elsewhere.
Teams mostly do.
But do you have a more likely shot to find a great quarterback when you're picking one or when you're picking 12?
I don't know, Jeremy. What do the numbers tell you?
They would say that you're more likely to get the number one, if you have the number one pick, to find the better quarterback because you have every quarterback on the board. You are not at the mercy of what every other team ahead of you is going to do.
You didn't hear it. We talked about it yesterday, but that was the big thing that we were talking about, too, was no matter how many quarterbacks there are in a draft, you would love to have your pick of the litter at the top so that you didn't have to use an extra pick to get the guy you want or move up or move around and position yourself because of the fact that you weren't in the top whatever to get the pick that you really targeted. You have to, and obviously, you have to be able to analyze the talent better than anybody else because the Bears missed on Trubisky. They might have missed on Fields, too, and they traded up and traded draft capital to get both guys. We know that, so we know that that was a swing and miss. We don't know what Trey Lance is going to be, but we've seen it twice with the Bears alone where you can trade up, you can give up more draft capital, you think you get your guy, and at the end of the day, you find out, man, I wasn't even close, and that's where you also have to have the right people internally. But overall, also, if you were just listening to what I was saying, it's not just about the draft capital and using it correctly and getting the highest draft picks possible. I said for a 2-year span of time, that's what you do so that you get the roster as good as you can with young players with those draft picks. At the same time, after year two, when you get all the contracts off the books, when you have the money to spend, when you know that there are free agents out there that can help you, that's when you start fortifying what you didn't draft with the guys that are in free agency that can that are younger players that can help you get even better.
713-780-ESPN. Hashtag embrace the suck or hashtag stop the suck. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I know one thing that you want to do on your NFL Sundays, your college football Saturdays, if you want to bet some baseball, which is always really fun to do, you can do all of that stuff at BetUS. They're back for their 28th year of NFL action, nearly three decades. Industry's biggest sign-up bonus, up to 200%. BetUS offers members the opportunity to cash in on all of your favorite leagues. The NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, you got to bet that. NBA, and much, much more. BetUS also has hundreds of new casino games while you're sweating out your sports bets, including the coolest European slots. They also have live dealers waiting for you at the tables. Can't beat that. You need a sportsbook with integrity and longevity, and you need to know you're going to get paid. You need a sportsbook that offers everything, including live betting, MMA, golf, horses, esports, and all kinds of crazy bets in your favorite parlays. Call today, 1-800-79-BETUS. That's 1-800-79-BETUS, and they'll walk you through setting up an account. Nobody in the industry gives better bonuses than BetUS. Join now. Mention 97.5, and you can get up to 200% in bonuses on your first deposit. Nobody beats that. Head to BetUS.com and join today. That's BetUS, where the game begins.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hashtag embrace the suck, hashtag stop the suck. Granato wants the Texans to stop the suck right now. He's sick of the embrace the suck. Look, and he also went on, and we just played that quote from Granato yesterday talking about that. He also mentioned that Nick Caserio is not dumb. He wants to win football games, all of that. I don't disagree. But if Nick Caserio's priority was to win more games in 2022, if he was looking at just in a vacuum, just the 2022 season, as opposed to 2023 and going forward, you would have traded all of your draft capital for, you know, mediocre to good players in the league.
You'd have a better backup quarterback.
You would have a better backup quarterback. If you really wanted to go get a quarterback, you could go get a quarterback with all the draft capital you had.
Somebody.
So, like, Nick Caserio is smart enough to where he's not embracing the suck. Well, he's loaded up on draft capital for the future. He tore down every bad cap figure that this Houston Texans team has so he can be a player in the upcoming free agency hot stove of the offseason. Like, what moves has Nick Caserio made other than signing, you know, Jerry Hughes, because you got to have bodies. You have to have dudes to fill up your 53. And Jerry Hughes was cheap, $10 million 2 years. That was a win for Nick Caserio. Does it make you a better football team in 22? Yes, it absolutely does. But is he going to move the needle to wins in 2022? Probably not, even though he's tied for second in the NFL in sacks with four. Every move that Nick Caserio has made is with the intention of the future. Look, if you wanted to win immediately, maybe you talk to Deshaun Watson into staying in Houston. You might say, well, that ship has sailed. Okay, well, then why did they trade for three first-rounders and not ready-to-win-now players? Look, even Seattle, who traded Russell Wilson, they got two first-rounders and three players right now. Yep. Nick Caserio did not do that. All of the trades that Nick Caserio's made is with the future in mind. So Nick Caserio is smart, but he's looking at 23 and going forward because he's currently embracing the suck.
Look, when you look at the roster and you look at what he's trying to do, this is the reason why when he started the press conference a year ago at the start of last season, he told you, don't base our progress on wins and losses. Base it on, you know, try to read between the lines. See through the wins and losses to see what they're trying to do. Last year it was veteran players, cheap contracts, short-term deals, get us through the season. The entire season was bridging the gap between how bad of a hole Bill O'Brien left behind and getting moving forward in the right direction as quickly as possible once the wheels on the train start moving down the track. And that is after year two. And that is why to start year two before the season started this season, they committed a full season to Davis Mills. They didn't get a big time quarterback either as a starter or a backup. They added a sprinkling of veteran players that in certain areas could make them better. But as you stated, even Stevie Nelson, as well as Jerry Hughes, they're going to be short-term fixes, so they couldn't be as bad as they were a year ago, but it wasn't the kind of commitment that you were making to a guy that was going to be part of your foundation. But now, because of the trade, because of the draft picks, because of the kids that you sat had a ton of savvy moves made to get the draft class you got, and we've seen how many contributions you've already gotten with two of your top six guys not even on the field yet, and you know that that draft class was an A. You do that again, and that's why I keep saying it's 2 years. 2022, that's when you stop embracing the suck. At the end of the 2022 season, you draft well. In the offseason, you get some free agents, and then you can commit more years and more money, and then you can really start pursuing wins, and you can forget all about embrace the suck.
Can I push back on something from last segment about the idea that your best chance to get a top quarterback is by embracing the suck?
Well, it absolutely is your best chance.
What is embracing the suck? What pick do they have to have where you feel like they successfully embrace the suck? If they're outside of the top five, would you say they still embrace the suck?
No.
Look at last year's playoffs.
Okay.
San Francisco quarterback.
Well, I mean,
not top five.
It was supposed to be Trey Lance who was top five.
No,
Trey
not
Lance
last year.
Not. I mean, Trey Lance is the future of San Francisco.
Trey Lance is their quarterback.
Sure, but if you look at Kansas City's dynasty, you're going to look at Alex Smith, you're going to look at Pat Mahomes. San Francisco is trying to kickstart a dynasty by selecting a quarterback in the top five.
Who had success last season. San Francisco, okay. Not a top five quarterback. Dallas,
that's why they traded
not a
for
top
one.
Five quarterback. Arizona did, LA did, but they didn't draft him.
No, they drafted Jared Goff in the first round very high.
Sure. Philadelphia, I didn't tell you it's not an option. I'm just telling you it's not as consistent as you think it is. Philadelphia, not a top five. Tampa Bay, not a top five. Vegas,
yeah,
they
drafted
five.
Jameis Winston and it didn't work out, but go on.
That's part of my point. You can't just say
so you think the Texans are going to trade for a Tom Brady. You think the Texans are going to trade for a Matt Stafford. You think the Texans are going to build enough of a roster where they're going to go out and trade for a 30-year-old veteran quarterback who's going to make them win right now.
I am arguing as many quarterbacks come out of the top five as in the top five. And you asked about our list, by the way. I found our top 10 list.
Okay.
Patrick Mahomes, not a top five.
First rounder, pick number 10.
Yeah, you need a quarterback in the first round, and I'd even say top 15.
Okay.
I just don't think they need to be in the top five.
Okay.
It depends on the draft class every year.
Sure, and this is a deep one.
But the difference between being – keep going, though. Keep going through your other picks.
So Mahomes, not top five.
10.
Rodgers, not top five.
Late first round.
Mistake. Allen, not top five.
Well, he was seven.
He was
okay.
Close.
Okay, but that's fine. Seven. I'm just trying to put a number to the name.
Brady.
Sixth round, a miracle.
Herbert, top five.
Yep.
Burrow, top five.
Yep.
Stafford, top five.
Yep.
Dak Prescott.
Third round.
Not top five. Kyler Murray, top five.
First pick.
And Deshaun Watson.
12th pick. So all of
60%.
Those, okay, that's fine. But what do all of those quarterbacks have in common? If you have the first pick, you can draft any one of those guys. If you have the 15th pick, you're all of a sudden shrinking the player pool of what you would have. Give me the top pick.
This is why I'm also talking about the fact that draft class matters. If you have a draft, like you said, this year that's loaded up, then positioning can be, it can fluctuate. You don't have to have one, two, or three. If you know there are five quarterbacks that are possibly franchise-type quarterbacks, especially if you know and have earmarked one or two that you really like, no matter, and they might slide. But in years past, you can say, hey, well, you know what? The reason why you saw and the team's needs too. If teams already have veteran quarterbacks and they're at the top of the draft, then you know you have it. You don't have to have as high a pick. But to be in the best position in the catbird seat to be able to do whatever you want to do and get whoever you want, it behooves you to be in those slots in the top of the draft.
See, the point, like, I understand your point, and it's a good counter argument, Brendan, that all those quarterbacks you mentioned are top 10 that we voted on prior to the season. You said 60% of them were outside of the top 5.
I do think you need to be the top 15.
But
the
that's
Texans,
fine.
In no whoa, scenario, whoa. Don't land in the top 15.
Okay, so 60% of the quarterbacks we had in our top 10 were not selected in the top 5. 40% were. I want to be picking from the entire litter. I want to have the option to pick anybody that I want. I don't want to be at the mercy of other teams that also might want the ones that I want. Also, those quarterbacks that we talked about. I mean, you have Deshaun Watson. You have Pat Mahomes. I can't remember the entire
Herbert
list.
Was seven.
But of those guys required the team trading up to get. Like, they were coveted. Kansas City traded up to 10 for Mahomes. Deshaun Watson was so coveted by Rick Smith and the Texans, they traded up to number 12. What did trading up also cost them? It also cost them an additional first-round pick.
A better young player that you didn't have on your roster.
The Texans could absolutely go 7-10 this season. They have the 10th pick of the draft. Cleveland makes the playoffs. They're the 23rd pick. And you can couple 10 and 23 to move up to 7. And draft the quarterback
so
that you want. But you lose out on a first-round player. Just
that's
lose your games and keep that pick.
The third variable. So the first variable is the quarterbacks that are available or the guy that you, the guy, whatever position group. But in this case, the quarterbacks that are available that are deemed worthy of being a first-round pick, a franchise-type quarterback. Secondly, who's picking where in the draft? If teams that already have a quarterback or a veteran quarterback are picking in the top five, then you don't have to worry about as much with them, although trades happen. And then thirdly, you need all of the draft capital you've accumulated through the Watson trade and through embracing the suck. You can't afford, you can still get the guy you want, but if getting the guy you want takes away one or two other young players that could help speed up the process of the rebuild, that sets you back. So, in order to avoid that, you finish where you finish, you get the top pick of the litter, and you do all those things without having to give up a single draft capital asset that you need.
Is there a slightly better chance to get your guy by picking 4 than 8?
Yeah.
I'm going to say yes. Yeah.
One, two, or three.
Slightly better chance. I don't think it's significant, and I think it's fair for somebody to say, I can't handle this anymore for a slight advantage.
What would you rather have, though? Would you rather have that slight advantage and it cost you 2 wins in the 2022 season? So you finish 4-12-1, you get the number 4 pick, or you can finish 7-9-1 and have the 8th pick. You tell me what you'd rather have. You make the choice right now. What would you rather have? 4th pick, you go 4-12-1, or you can have the 8th pick and you go 7-9-1. What do you take? 713-780-ESPN.
You're not going to the playoffs either way.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you're sacrificing 3 wins in a non-playoff team so you can be competitive and win some games for the Gipper and Rex Burkhead and Lovie Smith can add to his career resume. For what?
You can wear your Texans gear to the mall and the grocery store because you won a couple extra games this year and you can pump out your chest.
Be competitive. Lose 12 games.
My answer is the 4th pick. But I want to be clear, the gap isn't that significant.
See,
I'm not
bothered by winning a couple extra games. The gap is far more significant, and I think that we're also pigeonholing ourselves into the quarterback conversation, which I understand is fair because, look, we want quarterback. We all think that you need a franchise quarterback, but it's also dismissing, like, all right, what's Trevon Walker doing right now in Jacksonville? He's being really good, and all of a sudden the Jags are looking like a playoff team.
Well, that's why
Willie Anderson's the best player in this draft. Yep. What if Nick Casario doesn't like the quarterbacks, but he wants a game-changing edge rusher that would change the entire landscape of the defense?
That's why I prefaced it by saying it could be any position player or player that you want or think would make your team better, but because of the where our discussion started, we're talking about quarterbacks. And it all depends on those variables that I'm talking about. It has so much that goes into it more than just saying, well, pick here versus pick here. It's who's picking ahead of you and what are the needs and how deep of a draft class is it for the position player you need or quarterback you need that's going to factor in. And then what are you going to have to give up if you decide to not embrace the suck and how many lost players are going to cost you next year the chance to progress because you don't have them because you had to give them up to get the guy you wanted.
I want to look at last year's draft class as an example of what we're talking about. 713-780-ESPN. Are you hashtag embrace the suck? Are you hashtag stop the suck? 713-780-3776. The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Orchestrating and executing the plan's fault.
This is, yes, it's the people that are orchestrating it.
And then it's the same general manager and his staff that can't pick the right personnel that are also either dabbling in free agency and pick and spending the wrong money on the wrong guys or not getting the right type of guys that fit the plan.
This is what annoys me about the conversation. It's the argument. It's the Yuli Gurriel argument where you're not defending Yuli Gurriel with anything that Yuli Gurriel does well. You're just picking apart the other person's argument. It's like, okay, Detroit didn't do it well. What's the alternative? What, to go out and sign mediocre free agents whenever the Texans don't even have the money to do that until next year? It's like
spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save.